right club. Be the right club today.
Yeah. Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
Expect anything different?
Before we get rolling here, a quick couple of housekeeping items. I mentioned on the last podcast that episodes of Strapped would be airing on Fubo TV on Mondays at 6 and 6:30. Those are old episodes. All new episodes of Strapped will continue to air on all of our normal channels. No videos of ours, known videos, are going behind any paywall. I got a lot of messages about that. Apologies for the confusion there as well. The same podcast you're listening to right now is going to be featured on Dan Patrick Radio, Sirius XM channel 211. Again, you do not need to necessarily change any of your listening habits. We're just giving you some updates on some other distribution that is going on. And before we get going, this is something I got to tell you about something Callaway is doing to help you pass the time. This is a great, great idea. Wish we had thought of it. We're going to start off with trivia, and we're going to get to why. Which of these four players has the lowest career round at Augusta National, and what is that score between Danny Willett, Mark Leishman, Henrik Stenson, or Jim Furyk? I know you want to listen to the episode, so I'm just going to tell you the answer. It's actually Mark Leishman and Jim Furyk. They both shot a 66. And so if you like golf trivia like this, then Callaway has something for you. This Friday, April 10th, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, they've partnered with FanBeat to put on a 10-minute live golf trivia game that you can play on your phone, tablet, or computer. They're calling it the Maverick Majors Trivia Challenge, and there's a lot of prizes on the line. Maverick driver, Jaws wedge, Chrome Soft golf balls, and more. I don't know if you used to be an HQ guy. I don't know if that's still going on. I kind of did that for a while. This is basically the golf major version of that. So you're going to want to be involved in this. Again, live Friday, April 10th, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. And to answer the first question, visit callawaygolf.com/fanbeat. That's F-A-N-B-E-A-T, starting Thursday, April 9th at 8 a.m. So that's Eastern. callawaygolf.com/fanbeat to be ready for the 10-minute live game happening Friday, April 10th at 5:30 Eastern. Without any further delay, here's our podcast with Danielle Kang. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Welcoming on today in quarantine. I think it's safe to say, we'll declare it right now, our favorite LPGA Tour player, Danielle Kang. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm the new favorite.
I'm just sucking up to you, so you'll actually give us some good gold today. So don't get too excited.
Yeah.
Set the scene here. What's your current scene? Where are you at? How much golf are you playing? How are you passing the time?
So far, we haven't played much golf. Courses are open, but right now I'm strictly quarantined. And I put a little bit in my room, and I try to do a little empty swings, a little practice swings on my mirror. But other than that, not much golf. But however, I've been off since January, so I've been playing a lot of golf until recently.
Well, for people that don't know, where do you live?
I live in Las Vegas.
And what is the scene like in Las Vegas as far as the virus and everything? Is that a hard hit area? What's kind of, compare it to maybe what you've seen on the news in other parts of the country?
What I've seen so far on the news and comparable to them, Vegas has been pretty okay. I don't think we've been hit that hard yet. There are definitely people that are sick and getting contaminated. All the restaurants are shut down, takeout only. I think that's kind of the standard right now. But it's not that bad, to be honest. But I think we are getting a little bit more cautious than normal, and it's not that bad.
Well, and kind of the people I've talked to here that are maybe Corn Ferry guys and stuff like that in Jacksonville, they kind of are in a weird holding pattern of not knowing whether or not they want to practice right now, of like, I don't know what's coming next or when we're actually going to be playing. I don't really understand why I would be practicing really hard right now. Is that kind of the same boat you feel like you're in?
A little bit. I think I felt that a few weeks ago, but last tournament I played in was the Boca tournament in January. So I've been off for probably about 13 weeks now. It's been a long time. That's over 3 months. In the beginning, that's how I kind of felt. But I just really like playing. So I'm a bit frustrated that I can't just go out and, you know, play golf. I have new appreciation of just going and playing around on punch greens now.
Now you see how it's like when we go play golf. But we got a bunch of really good Twitter questions. We're going to get through as many as we can. I don't know if you flagged any, but I flagged a bunch of them. The first one comes from a huge fan, maybe the biggest fan. He just can't believe it would make his year if you would answer his question. At Big Randy NLU.
Love it.
Just a special shout out for him would be so appreciated. But he wants to know one skill, either chipping, putting, driving, distance, or mental, that you would steal from someone else on the LPGA Tour if you could.
Mental from Indy Park and chipping from Lydia Ko.
That's a quick answer. That's what I would say. Give us some details there. What impresses you about both of their mental game and Lydia's chipping?
Lydia's chipping, I can kind of put it in a way, when she hits wedge shots, it looks like the ball is putting on makeup as it's kind of loading to the hole. It doesn't look
what?
It doesn't look wild. It just kind of looks, you know, when people hit a chip shot, it's kind of, it goes, I don't know how to explain it. But then when Lydia hits it, it's kind of going, like, oh, I'm on my way. Let me powder my face. And it just kind of softly lands right next to the hole. Her hands are just incredible. How I see it.
It's like her chips are very polite, if you will. By the motions you're making on FaceTime right now, that's what it looks like to me.
No, polite is a different word. This is just casual. Casually sitting right next to the hole. Casually going to 2 inches and just going, thank you. And you just kind of go, how did that ball get there?
What impresses you about MB Park's mental game?
MB Park's mental game, I have the privilege to get to know her really well in the last few years, and my goodness, nothing phases that woman. I've tried off the golf course, on the golf course, nothing. Her mental game, if she sets her mind to it, she gets it done, and I think that's some special quality that people need, and she's definitely special.
Well, describe her game. Describe her game as a whole for people that maybe aren't that familiar with it or haven't seen her play a lot of golf.
Well, Indy Park's golf game is very sturdy. She is consistent. She doesn't look as if she is falling off the rails, or you don't see her get nervous technically. We don't see her giving off a lot of emotions, but that's what I like about her personality. She feels all the emotions. Everybody does, but it's the portraying. She's got the poker face on. She has the, I know what I need to do, and this is what I'm going to do, and that's the mentality she has, and I think that's great. That doesn't veer you off from your own goal, what you're trying to accomplish. So that's pretty incredible for me to see.
Where does her driving distance rank in terms of, like, other players you play with, and how it relates to you and other top players?
I don't think I've ever seen her miss a fairway. It's just straight every time. And it's high and soft landing. With irons, long irons, rescues. And then the putting. Don't get me started on the putting. My God. That ball is almost going in every time from wherever. It's either in or almost going in.
Yes, she can putt the absolute lights out. So Kyle Schrader's, to piggyback on Randy's question, if you had to take one skill from Big Randy and put it into your game, you had to take one. What are you taking?
I guess his people skills. Much nicer than I am, which makes you a happier person. When you're a happier person, you play better golf. So I guess that's a skill.
That's getting by on a technicality right there. I was going to say, like, you'd probably be best off if you took his chipping. That would damage you the least, I think. Not that you're a bad chipper. That's not what I'm saying. You're making a face. You don't agree.
You know what? I want to take the chipping. You're right. I just won't.
Yes, don't miss it. That's what I was thinking. Hit every green, and then you don't have to take his chipping, or don't have to use any of his chipping. So
I'm kidding, Randy. You're a great chipper. don't listen to my tone. Listen to the words.
The last one related to that is MM Half 22. Which KPMG PGA Championship victory means more to you, the 2017 individual or the 2019 team pro-am, of course?
Oh. Well,
it's just, you know, guys, how selfish are you? Your individual one or the team one?
I want to take the individual. I will. I'm sorry. But, Chris, since you and I are on FaceTime, I will show you how much the other one means to me because you are on my nightstand.
Oh, we're right there. There it is. You're somewhere in the house here as well. I don't know where it is exactly, but I promise you are.
Yeah. See? You guys are technically, you guys, I have a frame of, so that's how much it means.
Wow, that does mean the world to me. So Taylor Farrell asks, one thing that is keeping you sane during isolation?
I haven't gotten bored, though, guys.
What do you do? How do you not get bored, then? What do you do?
I'm pretty busy. I I've done a lot of workouts in the room. We've gone to a lot of different places. We've gone hiking, and I know that that's social distancing before they shut the parks down. We went to Red Rock, Zion National Park. We went to waterfall hikes, Mount Charleston, visited Seven Magic Mountains. Yeah, just, I don't know. I'm pretty busy for some reason.
Well, is the time, like, a lot of people complain about golf not having an off season and being travel, you know, you travel so much with it. Is it somewhat kind of nice to have some time away from the game?
Yes, it is, actually. Mav and I talk about how we have to appreciate this time because we're probably never going to get this kind of time again. We've never spent this much, you know, we never get a chance to spend weeks in and weeks out together. And yeah, we complain about not getting an off season, but we definitely do want to play as soon as possible. We're competitors, so we want to get out there. I haven't gone out there a long time. I miss playing golf competitively in front of fans. It's mixed feelings. We like it. At the same time, we want to get out there.
Yeah. Along those lines, a question from Cam Luxka. It's a tough one to pronounce. Mm-hmm. How did it feel to catch fire the latter part of the season, and is this hiatus good to fine-tune, or does it suck because you've been playing so well? Because you finished the season last year on an incredible note and had started on a good note as well. So how does that relate to your actual way you were playing?
I don't look at it as that it's going to be an issue. I'm kind of the type of person that, you know, you kind of have to go with the flow, what the world throws at you. And for me, of course, I keep wanting to play because I'm playing good. But I'm pretty sure that I'm not the only one in the boat where, you know, you plan out your entire year, you plan out your schedule, and it's all gone down the drain right now. And that's not just me. That's everybody. I mean, Hideki shot a course record and it got wiped. So pretty sure he's not very happy about that either. But it is what it is. It's life. That's all I can say. It is what it is. I just want everyone to be safe and healthy and just get the world back to normal. During then, I'm on what we're creating this new campaign. I've done a lot of the video challenges, the hashtag challenge each other. People are sending me a lot of funny videos, and social media is a half full-time job technically when you start a campaign, so that's keeping me busy as well.
Yeah, some Connor Hendrickson, he said the DMs during quarantine have to be out of control. He said, let's hear them.
My DMs have been regarding the challenges that I've been asking. So everyone's posting all the really, really fun videos. Just check out the Challenge Each Other account. I'm running it. Mav and I are running it. So anytime you guys tag us, tag me or Mav, we are downloading the video, reposting it, and we're donating money to 3Square Food Bank, which is the only food bank in Las Vegas that needs a lot of help. And that's where I actually volunteer. I'm not volunteering right now because of the whole, you know, no volunteer quarantining thing, but they're so many ways that we can help each other, especially in this time of air quote boredom. So keep an eye out.
That's inspiring. That's really nice. The Pike Man asked, how has Butch Harmon helped you? He seems to be more than a coach, but also a big fan. I'm not sure exactly what he means by that, but what's the timeline? When did you start working with Butch Harmon, and kind of what kind of a effect has he had on you?
So a lot of people have asked me what kind of effect Butch has on me. All I can sometimes respond, and it's kind of a joke, but not really. He got me up to number 4 in the world in less than a year and a half. He asked me how he did it. I really don't know. I just do as he says. That's as simple as that. But then if people ask me, what is that? I always respond, I don't really know. You got to ask the guy. He's kind of a crazy genius. I was having a lot of problems before I went to him, and that was in 2018 fall. I think I made 1 out of 9 cuts before I went to him. So I missed 8 cuts, 8 out of 9. Missed the final cut at Evian, and then I just couldn't keep it in the fairway. I've never hit it OB. I know it's good for you kind of thing, but I don't really hit it OB. I mean, you know, I don't hit it way right, way left, and that's what I was doing. And it was frustrating me. So then Dustin Johnson actually was the one that told me to go to Butch Harmon. 4 years in prior to 2014, he told me to go to Butch, and I said no. I said, no, it's okay. You know, you go to, it's just, I'll go when the time comes. And then 4 years later, I went to Butch Harmon, and Dustin goes, I asked you to go to him 4 years ago. You could have gone to him 4 years ago. I said, let's just move on past that. And Butch even knows that too, because Dustin said that to him. But I don't know. I started with him, and then I finished third, and then I won.
that'll work, I think.
It was pretty cool. And
So what is his teaching style like? I mean, does he, like, you know, quiz you? Is he giving you a bunch of drills and stuff for you to work on your own? Is it kind of what really activated for you? Did he just, like, inspire some things that were kind of already there within you? Because that's kind of what the sense I get from a lot of instructors, how they work with top tour pros, is they just got to really kind of find ways to ignite the players more than they are making huge structural changes.
Yes, I think that is what playing Coach Harmon the best. I don't think he has the same teaching style with everybody. He's not very, so personally speaking, he's not very technical with me. He's very goofy. We joke around a lot. We talk a lot, but it's a very casual lesson when him and I are together. It's basically hanging out and we have so much fun, but at the same time, he delivers the messages the way I would understand them. So, as people can tell, I'm pretty difficult, you know, just to, you know, Chris, oh, you don't have to nod. And why are you laughing, Maverick? He's laughing, like, excuse you.
I think I hurt my neck from nodding so hard at that, actually,
So, I could be a bit difficult, and I don't understand things very well sometimes, and he says things in a way that I would understand. And so far, since as we've been working together, I don't know how he gets in my head, but he does. And a lot of times I annoy him by saying, why didn't you tell me that earlier? When he says to do something and I do it, he goes, and he gets really upset. He goes, I told you that 3 hours ago. He just walked away or something, but he's fun.
Can you give us an example?
I was hitting the shot and he said, Danielle, the club is coming through a bit this way. The head is doing this. I need you to come in a little bit more shallow. And I stared at him and the mess said, I don't know what shallow means. And then he dropped the club and just walked away. He just walked away. He didn't say anything. He just walked away. He walked about 20, 30 yards, stopped, stands there, comes back and goes, play a draw. And I said, oh, okay. Why didn't you just say that? And then he just stares at me. But it works. So I don't know. That's what I mean by I can't really explain, but then he explains it in a way I understand. I guess he dumbs it down for me. Golf for Dummies. I think he could write that book. One time, I think he came up to me and he told me he was comparing me to somebody, and then he told me that this person had more dedication and more will. And then I don't know why that really irritated me. And then I said, what are you talking about? I said, I practiced so hard, and then I started going off at him because I don't know. And then he wanted to just give me a little bit more motivation. That's what he was trying to do. And then I was freaking out on the side, and I went, oh, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He goes, well, I got you thinking about it. And I went, damn it. So things like that. But he, I don't know, it's about Bush is even golf tournaments when I'm on the road, that dude watches TV. I'm in Asia and he's watching at 3 a.m. He's looking at the swings. He's looking at the shots and calls me on Saturday or whatever it is. How are you feeling? And he checks in with me. And that's the caring. That goes beyond just the coaching. And that's where I believe that he's a bit different with a lot of people is that he cares. He cares about his students and he loves helping people. And Butch has a huge heart and he just wants everyone to optimize the best they can and help them get there. And he's able to do that.
I'd say it's working. What the last Butch question? Steven Stewart asked. What you may have covered it there, but what is your best Butch Harmon story?
I can't really tell you all my favorite Butch Harmon stories. I'll let Butch do the talking. I always tell people, you can just give him a call.
All right, yeah. We could do that. We need to get him on the pod. He would be a great guest. I have a feeling.
Yeah, you gotta ask him. I can't say a lot of the things that we talked about.
A quick break here to give you a shout out again to our friends at Original Penguin. There's no new Taurus Sauce episode this week, as you know, that concluded last week with our final episode at Tobacco Road, but they were an absolutely tremendous partner to work with in this most recent season of Taurus Sauce, and I really encourage you guys to go check it out, originalpenguin.com. Again, so all the clothing we wore this entire season and what we've all worn for the last 6 months ever since that has all been coming from Original Penguin. You can go to their website and get 30% off your first order by going to originalpenguin.com/NLU30 just a great mix of stuff that is kind of more on the wild side, and they got also stuff that's on the casual side, ranging all the way from suit coats, dress shirts, polos, shorts, t-shirts, golf shirts that you can wear both, you know, on the course and off the course, stuff that easily transitions. It's really an endless array of stuff. I promise you'll have a lot of good fun poking around on that website, as I do on a near weekly basis. So thank you again to Original Penguin for their incredible opportunity they gave us with Torah Sauce, and I hope to do many more of these. And do go check them out. And always remember to be an original. Let's get back to Danielle Kang.
Well, Stephen Proctor asked, he said he'd like to know what you think about the idea of women and men competing in the same event as done in Australia, and your ideas on formats that you think might be cool.
I think it'll be really cool on stroke play or match play, team games or not. The idea of having a women and men team game at the same golf course would be like amazing, to be honest. Because even Pinehurst, I know we did it back-to-back weeks, but that was a lot of fun. We got to see the men played just before our tournament. And I know it wasn't major, but I absolutely loved it. I got to see the men compete on the weekend. I got to see how the golf course played. The golf course was set up. I mean, the conditions are still absolutely, you know, pure. So I hope that there's a team game one day where a men PGA Tour player, LPGA Tour player could team up and play against each other. It could be a match play bracket type of deal. Maybe even when there's a, quote, celebrity pro-am type, maybe we can merge them together. I think it'll just be fun because it'll showcase different parts of the game on what we're really good at and what they're really good at. I think a lot of people get confused sometimes that women actually don't miss a fairway. Men do. They think that a lot of the girls are, I mean, the women are better at stroke game versus the men. I think women have better accuracy than the men do. And that is my honesty. We just hit it so straight.
The iron play is what, when we played at KPMG, that's what stuck out to me about you. It's like your iron play was just so freaking solid. And the variables were not there at the same level as they are at the highest level for men. But it was fascinating to watch. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I can hit it way past you and you're in tighter than me on every single hole. It was just, it's such a
way
fun.
Past me?
Yeah, I hit it right
way
past
to
you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, way. Well, I'm still a little bitter that you like you thought I had to lay up on the third hole and
Okay. Oh yeah.
I haven't forgotten.
Way past it. Okay.
I'm complimenting you on it. It's like I should be able to hit it very close to the hole and I can't. And you're hitting, you know, whatever, 7 irons into the green and with extreme accuracy. That's what I'm getting at here. So.
Yeah. Okay. But yes, I agree with you 100%. When Maverick was in a group with us, when he tees off, the sound is completely different.
Yeah.
And people just kind of watch, go, whoa. And it's that crushing noise that we can't make. And I hope I don't offend anybody by saying that, but it's just honestly, they hit it so much further and so much harder. That's just how it is. They are going to outdrive me. A guy that's, what, Kurt Kitayama? He's 5 foot, what? I say that he's 5'5". He's shorter than me. And he is one of the furthest hitters in golf. And that's insane to me. And no, I don't think he's 5'5", but I'm going to tell him I said that. And I make him play the same tees with me, and then he's lost. Because for him, even he has to lay up because the golf course is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that I told you guys that he lost right now. He's going to be so upset. But yeah, so going back to the topic, women have a bit more accuracy than the men do, but men hit it really hard. And their short game is actually incredible. I caddied for my brother at the U.S. Open qualifier, right? And I don't even care if I throw people under the bus. Ryan Fox was playing in the group. Morgan Hoffman was playing in the group, I believe. I think those are the three sets. Now, at one point, we're playing a 36-hole qualifier at Ohio, Green, Ohio. And after around the 20th hole, I looked at Alex, and I think Ryan Fox asked me, hey, what, you know, how is this? Is there any difference playing, you know, men's or women's game watching? And I said, yeah, none of you guys have hit the green all at once in the last 20 holes. It is incredible. And none of you guys have hit the fairway all at once in the last 20 holes. Hit the fairway and the green, please. And they're all 4 or 5 under par. And they're just, and Ryan's left, Morgan's long, Alex is short right, and they're all just chipping to 2 feet. And I'm going, how is this happening? Their right side, left side, fairway bunker, hitting on the green, make up and down, 30-yard bumper shot. I'm just going, this is stressing me out. Just hit the fairway. think that showed me. I go, my God, these guys are so good at around the greens and their touch. And it's really, really motivating and inspiring to see. But at the same time, when they play with us, they go, do you ever miss a fairway or a green? Just miss.
Yeah.
So Mav always tells me that every time I get mad when I miss a 15-footer, he goes, you know, statistically, you're bound to miss more 15-footers because you have more opportunities to make them. So I don't think you should get so mad about missing a 15-footer on the third hole.
That's profound there. I always say, like, people, for male golfers, I've said this very many times, but we watch so much male professional golf and think that that's, like, how we should play the game. But in reality, like, that works at the highest level, but it's not that necessary to just hit it super far and be inaccurate, like, in our normal walks of life. And I learned so much more playing with somebody like yourself, or even like some mid-amateur or senior am guys that don't hit it very far at all, yet figure out ways to be creative and have great short games. And it just shows you that many different ways of getting the ball in the hole. It makes you want to just tighten up all of your dispersions, right? I mean, I don't need to hit like the perfect drive. I keep like striving for this amazing long high draw tee shot that I hit properly once in 20 times, when in reality I should just have a shot that just is very reliable, right?
Yes, it's not. I hope that people really take that to heart. I did a little clinic for Citibank, and it was a one-on-one lesson, and there was about 30-40 people, so I have to give lessons to every single one person. And it was pretty fun. And one guy came up, and I said, how can I help you, sir? And he said, I want to hit it long. And I said, what's your handicap? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, what do you shoot normally? He goes, 90. And I said, okay, what is extra 10 yards going to help you in your game? And then everyone started laughing. And then he just looked at me, and I went, no, I'm being serious. I'm not trying to be a dick here. I'm just being really serious. Go work on your putting. That's just ridiculous to me that you want to hit 10 yards just because you see Dustin Johnson hit it that far and all these Tiger Woods crushing his 30-yard slices and Bubba Watts. Just stop it. Just go putt. It's not realistic. They're not realistic here.
Exactly. They are not the model here. Honestly, I would just say striking irons well consistently towards middle greens is the best way to chop many shots for amateurs. So many shots. Yeah. So.
Uh-huh.
You were talking some about tees and stuff with Kurt Kitayama. I'm wondering, we got a question from WP Hoosier. How do you decide strokes and tees in a match between you and Maverick?
What we do is, I always ask for strokes. He never gives them to me. I think that's kind of rude, but whatever. Like, he plays my tees a lot. And my tees, meaning I play around 64 to 66, Vegas with altitude. A lot of times I play back tees with them, but I get shots on par fives. But it gets kind of stressful for me because I have a lot of four irons and hybrids and five woods in if I play back there. So it's not really fairness in the iron game. So what we do now is I ask them to come play my tees and I take their driver away.
That's interesting.
Yeah, or if you're Kurt, I give him the driver and then he still hits it in the crab and I love it.
Well,
he doesn't know where to hit it or not. But
how's that match play out then usually? I mean, who has the upper hand there? Is it pretty close usually?
Close at that point, because taking a driver away from Maverick, he can drive a couple of holes. So I kind of take the advantage on number 15 on our golf course at TPC Summerlin. I would ask him, can you drive the green? He goes, I can come close. And I go, haha, sucker. So I run up to I go one tee up and I just hit a driver on the green. So it's kind of not fair, but it is fair because I'm trying to take advantage. But it does get close, though. I think that is the best way I could manage the games, is taking their driver away and playing my team.
That's fun. What same guy asked the question, what your preferred on-course cocktail is?
I don't drink.
You don't drink?
No, I know. I know that might be surprising to a lot of people, but I actually don't drink. I don't like the taste of it, and I'm kind of a control freak, and I don't think I would like the way it makes me feel.
There you go.
I like to be alert at all times.
There you go. That makes a lot of sense.
And plus, I'm just crazy sober. I'm pretty sure adding alcohol is not that smart.
I feel weird nodding along to that, but I can see.
I'm completely okay at every situation. I don't really need anything to get me a bit crazier or a bit more relaxed. I think I'm good.
I'm guessing there's a story behind this one from Dave Evanson, which is, does your bro still annoy the crap out of you by walking up to check the flag stick no matter how far off the green he is?
Oh, yeah. So web.com did a little feature about my brother and I, but without telling either of us, they filmed us saying that we're both annoying. So that got people going, obviously. Yeah, my brother still hits the flag stick no matter where he is. I don't know what the... He says I should do it because he's a better chipper than I am, but I don't want to.
I'm looking for the specific question on this, but it was... I'll find who we can attribute it to, but something about the... Kind of you drummed up some controversy. Here it is, Tim Shermer. You faced a lot of criticism for your comments about the Solheim Cup. Has that forced you to rethink being candid or outspoken when answering questions from the media?
Yeah, it actually has. I'm always honest with you guys at No Laying Up. So yeah, I am definitely. It took me aback. I didn't, to be honest, there's two ways in looking at that. One.
What can you go through what you said?
I guess I said that team game is about taking each other's souls and, you know, going out there to crush the other team. But that interview wasn't about Solheim. So that's where I get really confused. But for some reason, it was for you, Solheim. So I never said America or U.S. Or Europe. But at the same time, after that got aired, and I went, wait, that wasn't for Solheim. And they were asking, hey, we need some kind of a controversy answer for this. Like, what do you think about team game? And I said, I don't know, team games, you guys have a teammate. It's like, no, like, give us something. Okay, well, teammates just crush each other, like, go take each other's souls. Like, you have a teammate to do it with. How fun is that? I don't know. But now, okay, if they get air for Solheim, let's look at it in a second perspective. Am I lying?
No. I mean, more upset about your apology.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is that a false statement? Like, do you go out trying to hold hands and be kumbaya with each other? Come on, let's not kid ourselves. So if people wanted to take a hit at me for it, go ahead. But I honestly, I didn't like the hit because one, I don't think I deserved it, and two, I didn't know about it, so it was kind of weird for me. A lot of people that know me, for me, I always say things the way they are. Now, in golf, that might be refreshing. It might not be, but there will be some rare opportunities where I'm very candid, which is with you guys knowing up and. I appreciate that, though, because that's life. And to be honest, we're at the coronavirus pandemic right now. Does it really matter what I said back then? And yeah, it is. And plus, guys, Suzanne Pettis had the greatest putt history, one of the sporting history moments, and she retired. How amazing is that? Like, that's what people should be talking about. Not, oh my God, guess what she said. And it's not like I said a false statement.
Yeah. Well, that's just where it's good to hear context, right? Like for a lot of interviews in sports, you know, if especially press conferences, if you say it, like you can tell a whole story on a podcast and everyone can hear you laugh about it and just think, oh, that's not controversial. But when you take like those two sentences and you print them, it looks like, and somebody can make a story out of that, that's when people go back into their shells and don't want to say anything anymore, just because I'm not even saying that's not representative. Like I've read that statement and I was like, yeah, that's cool. That is what makes team events like cool. Like, who is actually offended by that? Who's upset? Was anybody upset? Like, really actually upset?
Yeah. That's where I come out with. Thank you, Chris, for actually, you know, being with me on that. It's because it just kind of shocked me is that when people, you can never satisfy everyone, right? You're always going to piss off somebody. Everybody has something to complain about. And me included, and that's people, that's life, and I get that. But when they always want someone to be more outspoken, when people, they don't want the same answers, they don't want the same personality. Well, if somebody says one thing out of line, they crush that person. So it's kind of like, and for me, I didn't even think I was going to take a hit for it because I didn't even know that was going to happen. So then I went, wait a second, what interview was this? And I go, oh, and then I sat there and I went, did I say something wrong? And then, you know, people blamed me for losing the Solheim and that I, how do you blame somebody? So then I went, you know what, whatever. Yes, I didn't play that great, but like, yeah, I lost a couple points. And yeah, do you think but my words didn't affect the game. I think the way people, I hope next time with anything else happens to other people, I just wish that they could just kind of embrace the truth and embrace the reality and just have fun with it instead of criticizing. The criticizing is put it this way, people criticize each other, and there might be mistakes and there might be misunderstandings, but it's kind of, it takes away from the beauty of the game. It takes away from the fun of the Solheim Cup, and it takes away the golf, and the golf is what we're here for. So it doesn't matter what I said. It doesn't matter what I will say. It doesn't matter what anybody says. Just watch the golf, and if you don't like it, you don't have to go crazy about it.
I like the controversy, though. Like, that's, it's fine. Like, who, like, I don't like people when people just get all upset about something that doesn't require anyone getting actually upset.
Suzanne comes up to me, and I'm going to be honest about this. Suzanne came up to me that week, and she was like, dude, girl, because I know Suzanne really well, and I adore Suzanne. She speaks her mind, and she has zero BS. And she goes, girl, I'm so happy you started something. And I go, dude, I didn't even mean to start it. And she goes, I'm going to come back at you with it because I've been waiting for somebody to start something. She goes, I'll step on your throat. And I went, I love it. It's just, but that's our combo. It's just, it's funny. And a lot of people didn't take it lightly. So I just hope that in the future, whether it's the Ryder Cup, the Solheim Cup, the UL International Crown, to the President's Cup, it's all fun. And no one's out there to harm each other. And just like now, just come together and help each other and understand each other more so than someone said this and that. And that's what I really hope people can do. That's what I call the Twitter trolls. Yeah. There are some hardcore Twitter trolls.
Well, take us to the Solheim Cup, then, the actual event and everything that played out, which ended up being one of the most exciting sporting events, really, of the last year. I don't know where you were at the conclusion of it and the emotions that were kind of riding on everything.
Honestly, the entire game flipped, the entire match flipped in the 3 minutes while we're all standing there and watching. That final 3 minutes is where everything flipped. I think it was pretty heartbreaking for us to lose because we didn't anticipate it up until the last 3 minutes. And me personally, I think it was very difficult for me to play in that kind of weather. And I played really well my final match, played against Carlos Segonda, and I think we made the most birdies combined in the entire day. But Carlos just wouldn't budge. And it was just, we went off the first, and I know Carlos really well. She hits it far, and there was a couple mistakes I made on the par fives where I know she could reach it in two, so I just gambled and went for it. And even on 16, I know she can reach it, but I can't. And I have to lay up because there's a stupid creek and I can't cover it. And I go, screw it. So I had to lay up. And I had a birdie opportunity. My wedges were good and I missed that putt. That putt, I still dream about it more so than the 18th hole. Because people have said to me, God, that bogey on the last must have been hard to lose a point. Yes, however, Carlota had an iron in her hand. I had to go for it. I had to. She has an iron on a par five, and I was just trying to hit it on the left side. I kind of mishit it by a little bit, but caught the lip, went back in the bunker. Didn't know it had that much sand. I pulled the trigger, hit it well, then into another bunker. So that's the hole I call. I sometimes look at myself and I say, I executed the six shots exactly how I wanted to. I made bogeys. There's nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. However, 16th hole is what really bothers me, is that I knew that that putt was a little high. I had a feeling a little, it was high. And then I backed off, I relined it, and then I went, it's still high. But at that time, we were all a bit behind, and I was on the clock, and I couldn't back off for the third time, and I was really slow. I admit, I was slow, and a lot of other people were slow too, but I just thought to myself, I was over the putt, and I was going, no, I'll make it on the high side of the cup. And I lifted it, and I went, damn it. I freaking knew it was high. Why did I? And I lost that hole, and I was so devastated. But a couple of the memorable moments were playing with Lizette Salas on that 36-hole day. We made that final putt to win that match, and that was a huge point because we were the last team on the golf course, and we were watching the scoreboard the entire way. That is one of the most memorable moments because my partner hit it close enough where I just went at my putt and I made it. I stole her thunder, but it's our thunder, so it was really, really great moment. We won that point.
How long was the putt? Did the old Danielle Kang quote come up at any point about putt length?
No, not missing under 5 feet or whatever. I'm just guessing here. Probably 20 feet. So I'll say 20 feet. Lizette hit it to about 15. So I was up first. Mm-hmm. It was just a really cool moment. It was raining. It was cold. We were the last people there. And Lizette and I just needed to put a point up because we haven't been playing very good. But I don't think it was our game. It's just that weather, man. It is so cold. Like, my toes were freezing. It's TMI. My toenail died. Two of my toenails died from that week. They froze.
Just from the cold?
From the cold. It was two of my toenails were absolutely black. And I couldn't walk. And I obviously were math calls us adrenaline junkies. So during the moment, I don't feel it. But my goodness, it was so cold. And I was shivering. And I think I have to get better at playing in the cold. So I'm trying to go out when it's cold in Vegas just to figure out how to play in the cold. My record in the cold isn't so great.
Well, for Way Wright said, you may have just covered it, but what's the one shot you wish you could have back? Is it that putt there on 16?
With 16 putts, that's the one shot I wish I could have back. That is the one regret I have.
In your whole career?
No, that week. Okay. That's the one week. I have traumas, man.
What about your whole career?
All golfers have
What about your whole career? What's the one shot you would want to have back?
Third hole at ANA last year.
What happened?
I pulled it a hair. I didn't know that there was an OB left. That was just at the bottom of the car path. And I actually didn't know. And I think that was a big fault. And I wish I could have that back because I hit it basically pure out of bounds. And I took myself out of the run in ANA. I always tell people, I don't mind losing as long as I've done the best I could. And that one, I can't give myself that credit, is because I took myself out of the running chance so early on Sunday because I didn't know there was an OB. And not knowing is not acceptable to me. And it was just, I always give myself a little miss hit, you know, the little gap. And I gave that miss that I hit was the gap that I gave myself. And I went over there thinking it was perfectly fine. And then I went, how is that OB? And I realized the OB line was very close to the bottom of the hill. If you hit remotely just left of the rough, it will kick dead left into OB. And that's what I didn't know. I wish I could have. That's the shot I regret. But I probably have more regretting shots. I just don't remember. I three-putted to lose to Sydney Michaels, that Canadian woman's amateur. That was a thing that I remember, too. Oh, there was another shot at U.S. Junior that I lost to, and she won the championship. Yeah, I could keep thinking about it, but I'm letting it go. So let's not bring up
all right. Comments. We'll keep going then. What, James Copeland, the oddest fan interaction you've had during a tournament?
I don't remember.
If you think of it, let us know. We can come back.
During a tournament?
Yeah. Oddest fan interaction.
During a tournament is usually fine. I just don't like it when people break into my hotel room.
Is there a story there?
Yes. I've gotten my hotel room broken into a couple times. I don't know how they know where I stay. That was a bit weird. Because I don't know what they do in there. They didn't steal anything.
Is why you were gone? Your hotel room was broken into?
Yeah, when I went to dinner. Twice. So that's where I get a bit weirded out. But they didn't steal anything, which makes it weirder. I wish they would have stolen something. Yeah, it just makes you feel... Imagine someone breaks into your house and they don't take anything. But all your stuff is everywhere. So what were they looking for? That's where I go, I don't know, right?
Did you get anything, fingerprints or anything, figure out who it was or how they got into your room?
Oh, I saw a video. So I think they had a key card. But a lot of the hotels, what I ask them to do is, funny enough, most of the hotels, you go up to the front and then tell them, hey, last name, Kang, room 362, they usually give you the key.
They don't really ask for ID very often in that scenario.
No, not very often. So I think that's where I get very nervous when I check in, when people say, oh, thanks for joining us, Ms. Kang. Your room number is 254. Like, some people could hear that. So I just always ask not to say my room number. Yeah, or I don't know. Oh, we have security things where you get into the elevator, you don't push your button first, things like that. But if people want to find out things, they can find out. Like I said, steal something. I'm not encouraging people to do that, but for me, that was a bit, I rather would have gotten something stolen than I was like, oh man, they took my computer.
Yeah. You know? Then you at least know what they're doing, why they're in there. But yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. That's bizarre. Luke McGrath asks, which course do you think you would have the best chance of succeeding on if you were to play in a men's U.S. Open from the men's links? So A, Marion, which is 7,000 yards in 2013, Pinehurst 2, which is 7,562, or Shinnecock, 7,440 in 2018. Which of those three would you have the most success on, you think?
Really quickly, I'm going to call in for a friend right now because I actually don't know the golf courses, but I'll accept the Pinehurst number two. So what do you think? Matt heard the question, so. Mary? He said choice one. Matt has not seen the redo, but he said he will give me the best chance there.
Okay.
We'll, why would you say
we'll accept that as final answer.
Oh, God.
Why?
He keeps trying to. He keeps trying to encourage me to go play a Monday qualifier.
On the PGA Tour?
Yeah, so we can spend more time together.
How not awesome. Why would you want to do that? Not spend more time with Mav. I meant like actually Monday qualify for a tour event.
I thought about it when all my Asia tournaments got canceled and PGA Tour was still up. Not because that, when I had no opportunity to play in the women's event, I just wanted something to play in. So I was looking for places to play. But yeah, in the future, if there's an opportunity, I definitely would take the opportunity. It's not an opportunity I would turn down. Option A, though. We go with option A.
That would be really... I never really thought about the Monday qualifier route. I'm surprised more women players don't play in like Monday qualifiers and stuff, trying to get into tour events.
Well, we'd have to play the pre-Monday qualifier and then the Monday qualifier.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But we can't think of doing that because we don't have time, man.
Right, I know. That makes sense. I know, but when there are down times, I just thought that could be interesting. But I hadn't really thought that through. So do it in Hawaii. That'd be a fun story to follow. You should do it. That'd be really cool. So, all right, this is something I'm curious to as well. This is from @TWFan. Living in Vegas, how often do you go to the casinos and what's your favorite one?
I actually go down to the strip quite a bit. I love eating out. I don't gamble, but I do love Bellagio and Aria. So one of my favorite restaurants are Yellowtail at Bellagio and Carbone at Aria. And I go and watch a lot of shows. I've seen most and all of the Cirque du Soleil shows. I went and saw Ariana Grande. I went and saw Bruno Mars. Honestly, living in Vegas has been pretty awesome.
Yeah, take me there. Yeah, because like I think people, you know, obviously most tourists know Vegas for, you know, the Strip and whatnot. But what is it like? Golfers rave about living in Vegas. What is it about it that makes it so enjoyable?
The more good things I say, the more people are going to move here.
That might be true.
So yeah. I'm going to start with don't move here. And then
it's too hot
because we have way too many people here now.
Is it growing?
It's grown so much. In the beginning, it was just Indy Park and I are the only two women players here, as far as I know. And then in the men's, it was Brad Morris, Scott Piercy, Kevin Na, and a couple of the UNLV guys. And then now, it has grown so much that I can't even name everybody. But I've got a lot of friends here now, which has been a lot of fun. But going back to the question, I guess I veer off a lot. The airport is the best. Easy in and out. Wherever you go is only a 20-minute drive. Your home is only 15 to 20 minutes away from the airport, and it is the easiest airport to just get through. And that's what makes it so much better for the golfers is the airport stress, right? And then the golf courses. There's golf courses everywhere here, and they welcome pros more than any other places that I've seen. They love, like, TPC Summerlin. That's my home course. And I play there almost all the time, but unless I go to Shadow with MGM, but they love their pros. They are so respectful of us. They love having us, and that's what makes us want to be here. You know, some golf courses could be a bit uptight. Some golf courses could be like, you know, kind of cautious on how many people they want on the golf course, off the golf course, and there might be too many rules restricting, but these people are just so very welcoming. And they're just so proud of us. And I think that's what makes the golfers in Vegas love Vegas, is the golf courses and the hostness of it and the travel. And plus, it's Las Vegas, which means if one of them wins, they're all having a party on the Strip, which is the, quote, best night of their lives. And then on two, they could all go out and eat at one of the best restaurants in Las Vegas. There's just no lose situation. It just could get really hot and really windy. That's all.
I'm sold. That was very, 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 very convincing. Okay, I'm not moving there. Don't worry. At J. Miller 2036, he says, one round at Augusta with three buddies or one round at your favorite local course with Tiger Woods. Which would you choose?
One round at my local course with Tiger Woods.
I thought you might go the other way. Why would you choose that?
I don't have to fly to go play somewhere. Tiger's coming over here. Why would I try to take that chance down?
Have you ever been to Augusta?
No.
Should
I tell them about what I... Really? I should? Okay. Oh, man, really?
Yeah, you have to now.
I found out Augusta was in Georgia last year.
Where did you think it was?
I never thought about being anywhere else. I just didn't know where it was. I've never watched the Masters.
Never watched the Masters. Is that any reason in particular?
No, not really. I saw Tiger play two holes last year when he won. About it. But I don't know. I'm always usually playing a practice round or boxing. So, you know, one of my really close friends. I watched it because Tony Finau was playing the last few holes, and then I don't want to bring that up, but he hit in the water on the par three, and then I stopped. So I watched about two holes, and then Tony Finau was in the run. I ran over to the TV, and then he hit in the water, and I went, damn it. That was a bad loss in my channel. But no, not particular reason that I don't want to watch it or I want to watch it. It's just I haven't really had a specific drawing. Like if my brother was playing in it, or if one of my best friends were playing in it, if Maverick was playing in it, I'd be there. I'd be watching, you know. But I would rather be practicing again.
Yeah.
Because I have a tournament. But yeah, Butch said I was a disgrace. I'm sorry.
Well, is it weird for, like, I remember seeing some tweet, like, when the Augusta National Women's Amateur was announced, I saw one or two LPGA players tweeting, like, hey, like, when do we get to play it? Is it weird that, you know, obviously the men's pro game goes there and now the women's amateur game does, but there's no women's pro event there? Is it kind of like, do you see any growing animosity on the tour about any of that?
I think a little bit. For me, I've definitely thought about that, is going, Augusta is a prestigious place. And I know Augusta. Like I said, I'm just joking aside. Where it is, watching this entire tournament, yeah, I get it. I wasn't raised with golf background. I just never really, you know, I just learned to play. I didn't really watch, right? So putting that aside, the idea of the Masters is what kind of draws me in to this entire controversy of women thinking, why don't we have our own? So Masters tournament is a prestigious event held at this incredible golf course called Augusta National. Now, the women get to play it, right? The amateur women. So I could see where our players are coming from and thinking, well, when are we going to get to play? Because we don't have something like the Masters, where there's a $1 grilled cheese sandwich and where people can't run, but they're all run, you know, fast walking. Yeah, I'm doing a little motion of fast walking to their spot. And people wait years to get the tickets. And I hope the game grows. And I know we're trending in the right direction. And one day we'll get there. But for now, I don't want to demand. I don't think anyone should have anything. But I think it'll be pretty cool one day if we do get to play. Because playing Augusta is people's dreams, right? Now, I know I chose Tiger Woods coming to Vegas, but I think that's a way better bet for me.
Well, I just wouldn't want you to get lost on your way to wherever Augusta is located.
Hey, I got to take three friends.
They could find
the three friends.
They could find
three friends, yeah.
Yeah.
They could find all their own. You know what, guys? No, screw you guys. I'm going to take Tiger Woods all by myself.
There you go. Nick Lozito asks, he says, I'm interested in why LPGA careers seem to be shorter than PGA. I understand pregnancy and family, but also curious if bigger purses would change that. As a fan, I would love to see careers like Tiger and Phil in women's golf competing till near 50.
You got Julie Inkster. Julie's charging.
Mm-hmm.
I guess bigger purses can change that. Yeah, it could. I'm not there yet, so I can't really speak for people. But speaking for me, from my perspective and in my thoughts, yes. I think if you go through a pregnancy, I don't know what it's like to go through a pregnancy, but I don't know if you're the same right after pregnancy. You could be the same, but I'm talking for majority. On top of that, if you have hit. It's not a double standard. I think it's just really hard to have this career. And hats off to the moms that I've had this career. Like, I don't know how they did it, but they're the outliers. They can do it. And I think we need to figure out a way, but it's not easy. You know, no route is easy. I actually don't know. I don't know how women could just do up to 50, traveling the world like we do, flying the commercial plane, waiting in the airport, not being able to spend time with your kid. Maybe there is a bit of a difference between women and men in that sense. But this is not an easy life, and we don't get to be home ever. We travel 30 weeks out of the year, and we're all over the world. We're not in the United States only. We're about 30% out of the country. Sorry, Kamish, if I gave the wrong percentage there, but we have a lot of international tournaments. We're living in Asia. We're living in overseas Europe. It's not easy. And to have a family and do that and play a full schedule, really hard. So maybe a bigger purses would change it. Maybe bigger purses would get more, you know, people into golf itself. But I think just the lifestyle that gets the women to retire earlier than men do.
I think it makes sense. Yeah, that's a really good answer. A couple more, and we'll let you get out of here since you've got so much going on here. JB, I'm not laughing. I wasn't making fun of you. You sound very busy. JB for three. He goes, how do you go about getting new equipment? Are the trucks as prominent on the LPGA Tour as PGA? How often do you switch irons and wedges? I'll hang up and listen.
We don't have tour trucks on our tour. So, unfortunately, we have a tour van where the reps come out and the reps work together along with our tour van together. We've got the PXG rep, we got the Ping rep, we got the Callaway rep. Those are the three people that are out consistently. And the Titleist rep. Other than that, we have one van that they share. So answering that question, I don't really know what it's like to just walk into a van and switch plugs, unfortunately.
I knew that to be the answer. I was just wondering
why you said I'll sit back and listen? I'm like,
No, that was his comment. It was, I'll hang up and listen. That was not the editor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was not the editor there. I don't think a lot of people know that though. I think it's just a genuine question, like that he had, and a lot of people probably didn't know the details behind the van or how that works on the LPGA Tour. So
think whatever you guys like. I'll leave your thoughts open on that one.
You sound like you have some more takes on that.
But that's my own personal opinion, so I will leave my opinion out of this.
Okay. All right.
I could answer the question.
Let's end with this one. Steven Kastner says, how did the change in the CME championship from the possibility of multiple winners being rewarded for year-long play to now one big check, which is $1.5 million, for one big check for someone that gets hot in the last week, how did that impact the tour? Should they go back to the old way, embrace this, or something else, in your opinion?
To be honest, the way he put it made me doubt it just now. The wording of that question just made me rethink my answer. Yes, I get it. Somebody that gets hot one week gets $1.5 million. That is okay. Let's disregard that really quick. I think it's really great. The entire premises of the idea behind it is that there is the biggest check, finally, that we could win over $1 million in a tournament. I don't care whether it's for one person or for, even if we did a season long thing, it's not as if we're all getting paid millions here. So I think it's a great start to where we could be headed to if somebody has the opportunity to even win $1.5 million the entire season. I think that's pretty awesome. Now, getting to the whole, is it fair? I don't know what's fair or what not fair, but she won $1.5 million. And to be honest with you, if I'm standing behind that $1.5 million check, I'll tell you it's 100% fair. Right? Yeah, depends who wins, right? Yeah, if I won, of course it's fair.
So no, I like it. I think it's a fun carrot at the end of the season, and it was very dramatic last year, that's for sure. So maybe we
very
can
dramatic.
Look forward to you holding that one day, telling us how wonderfully fair that is.
One guy did come up to me. Where was it? In Maui? We're in Maui. I missed the putt on the final hole. And they're like, did you know that that was for to tie the lead, blah, blah, blah? And I went, yeah, I did. And he goes, well, you lost. You must not like money because, you know, you missed it. And I just looked at him and I go, thank you. And then I just stood there. And the map at that point went into the clubhouse. We were playing, what, Kapalua? And he went to the clubhouse. He just comes out. He looks at my face and he goes, oh, no, what happened? I was gone for 3 minutes. What happened? And I went. And then one of his buddy goes, some guys came up to her and said, you must not like money because you missed that putt. Why would you leave that putt short? Because I left it short, right? And then Matt goes, oh, my God. And I looked at him and says, thanks again for reminding me that I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. God! Oh, God.
Before we leave, can you leave us? Can you give us a quick sampling of the pro-am voice that you debuted in our video? What's your pro-am,
voice?
Yeah, what's your pro-am voice?
I was laughing. Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me. I've been really honored to be on your podcast today. And thanks for letting me be myself always. And hope to see you and Randy soon on the golf course again. I totally saw Randy at Boca. Was it at Boca? Or, yeah. So I hope to see you guys again. I hope the Kia comes up to, I hope this, the world goes back to normal and we'd be able to all hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Like we used to.
I don't know how you're keeping a straight face right now. So, all right. Well, thank Mav in the background there for his help on several of the answers. And thank you for spending an hour with us. And I'm sure our listeners will greatly appreciate hearing from you.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on this podcast again.
We'll see you soon.
Always a pleasure.
All righty.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!